This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Rock Chick Reawakening, written by Kristen Ashley, performed by Susanna Jones. Prologue. Building Castles. Daisy.
You're a lunatic.
You didn't think that when I had my mouth wrapped around your dick.
That's because you couldn't use it to talk.
Kiss my ass.
Not anymore, babe. We're done.
Like I care.
You'll care when you got no one's dick to suck to pay your cable bill.
My eyes were closed. I was lying alone in my dark room on my back in my twin bed. My bed was lumpy, seeing as Mama bought it from a yard sale, but I didn't feel that. And my room was small, and it didn't smell all that great, this coming mostly from the carpet. It smelled like that from all the way back when we first moved in. Mama didn't bother to do anything and got mad when I complained about it, so I tried to clean it myself 3 times, but that smell just wouldn't go away. I didn't smell the smell either. And I could hear the words, but even though they were coming from just down the hall, I was somewhere else. I was building castles.
Do not go there!
Fuck off.
I'm telling you, do not go there!
The door to my bedroom opened, and so did my eyes. The beautiful castle I was building melting clean away. I could smell the smell. I could feel the lumps. I could sense the closeness of the room, its thin walls, its faded, ripped-in-places wallpaper, the ceiling light I never turned on because the cover had been shattered on a night I didn't like to remember, and now it made it too bright when I turned on the light.
Daisy, sweetheart,
he called. I looked to the door. He was in shadows, those caused by the dark of my room in the hall. The only light was coming from somewhere else, probably her bedroom, because it was real late. Tall, he had a beer belly, but he also had broad shoulders. I liked his shoulders and his eyes. They were always twinkling when he looked at me. Even when he was mad at Mama, he'd look at me and it was like he forced the ugly out, so all he'd ever give me was just the twinkle. And he always used that soft voice when he talked to me. Always, even when he was fighting with Mama, like just then.
Get away from that door!
My mother screeched, and I saw the shadowed man jolt as she shoved him to the side. He came back up, hand up, finger pointed in her face.
Chill!
He bit off. I wanted to close my eyes, but I didn't. I never could in times like these. Times like these, it was impossible to build castles. I knew this sure as certain, seeing as I'd tried. His head swung back to me.
I gotta go, girl. You need something, all you gotta...
She don't need shit!
My mother snapped. His head turned to her again. He hesitated, and I watched as his body moved when he took in a deep breath. Then he looked back to me.
I'm sorry, sweetheart,
he whispered. So was I. I was young, only 10, but I understood why he was sorry. But he wasn't sorrier than me.
You tell her you're sorry, you treat me like garbage, and you tell her you're sorry?
Mama shouted, and the shadowed man jolted again because she'd shoved him again. He reached in, grabbed the knob to my bedroom door, and pulled it to. He did stuff like this, too, a lot, because they fought a lot. He tried to make it so I wouldn't see, coming down the hall and closing my door, or when they were in the middle of it and I was in the living room or kitchen, telling me quietly,
maybe you should go to your room, sweetheart, close that door, yeah?
But he could never make it so I wouldn't hear. With that, he disappeared. But she didn't. Her voice still came at me.
That's it. You're just leaving.
Nothing from him, but more from her.
You can't be serious. You cannot be freaking serious.
He didn't reply.
You're such an asshole. A total freaking asshole.
He wasn't an asshole. He was a good one. The only good one. Or at least the only good one I'd met. He didn't hit her. He didn't hit me. Both of these my daddy did before he took off and we never saw him again. And other ones did besides. Her and me. He didn't steal her money. Daddy did that, too. He didn't look at me in a way that made my skin feel funny. It was good that Daddy didn't do that. He didn't eat all the food in the house and drink all Mama's beer and bourbon and then complain there was never any food or beer or bourbon in the house and ride her behind until she got in her junker car and went out to get more for him. And yeah, Daddy had done that too. Those kinds stayed around a lot longer than this one did. Too long. But never that long. They always left. Like Daddy did. And I never missed them. Yes, even Daddy. But I'd miss this one with his twinkly eyes and his soft voice and the way he called me sweetheart. Not like that was what I was, but that was what he had. A sweetheart. No, there were not a lot of those kinds. Not for Mama. Not for me.
Stretch!
She shrieked.
You get back here, Stretch! Get back here!
The front door slammed.
Fucking motherfucker!
Mama screamed. I closed my eyes, let myself drift away, and I started again to build my castle. A southern woman always has her table laid. Miss Anna May was talking to me in her pretty dining room with the big dining room table all laid with the finest china, sparkling crystal, shining silver, and its big bunch of light purpley-blue hydrangeas with cream roses set in the middle. She adjusted a napkin in its holder sitting on a plate that was sitting on a charger that was resting on a pressed linen tablecloth. If she's fortunate, Miss Anna May went on, and standing opposite the table to her, the fingers of my hands wrapped over the back of a tall chair, all ears, like I always was when I was with Miss Anna May, I watched her move around the table with difficulty. She wasn't a young woman. She also wasn't a beaten one, even losing both her kids and her husband and having to carry on alone. She can change it with the seasons. I have Christmas china. Her faded blue eyes turned to me and a smile set the wrinkles in her face to shifting. But you've seen that, haven't you, Miss Daisy?
Yes, ma'am.
And I had. Miss Anna May did her house up real pretty at Christmas. She always made sure I came over so she could show me all around and give me a tin of Christmas cookies she baked herself. Mama had been working for Miss Anna May now for over 2 years. It was the longest job she'd ever had. She usually got fired a lot sooner than that. I reckon Miss Anna May kept her on as her daily girl not because she liked her or she did good work and kept a tidy house, which she did not Miss Anna May's and definitely not ours. I also didn't reckon she kept her on because she liked the fact Mama would be late a lot, show up hungover a lot, call off sick a lot, or one of her men friends would show at Miss Anna May's big, graceful mansion and cause a ruckus. No, I didn't reckon any of this was why Miss Anna May kept her on. I didn't know why Miss Anna May kept Mama on, except for the fact that she was a good southern woman. Miss Anna May turned to the big window that faced her back garden, calling, "Come here, child." I moved directly to her. When I got there, she lifted her scrawny, veined hand to my shoulder and rested it there. It felt light and warm.
"She works in her garden, a good southern woman," she shared, her eyes still aimed out the window. "She cuts her own flowers, arranges them for her own table."
We didn't have any flowers at our house. It was actually good when the yard died during that drought last summer and became a big patch of dirt and scrub. It looked better not overgrown. Like someone lived there, they just didn't care. Instead of looking like no one lived there, and no one would ever want to. The landlord didn't agree. He got up in Mama's face about it a lot. But she ignored him like she always ignored him when he got up in her face about things. Like the neighbors complaining about the fights or when she'd played her music too loud, which was also a lot on all counts.
"You have sweet tea in your fridge, sugar, always,"
she said to me. I nodded, looking from her colorful garden to her and feeling some pressure from her hand on my shoulder as she rested it into me, giving me her weight. I stood strong and took it. I'd take all her weight if she needed to give it to me. That's how much I liked Miss Anna May. And she had all my likes, seeing as Mama was how she was, her men were how they were, the kids at school were how they were, the teachers, the lady behind the counter at the store. Everybody. Yes, Miss Anna May had all my like, mostly because there was no one else who'd let me give it to them. This made it sad that Mama didn't let me come with her to Miss Anna May's house often, even though Miss Anna May always acted like she was real happy when I came. And I knew deep down in my heart this wasn't because I helped Mama and did all the gross stuff, like cleaning the toilet so she could have a break from that kind of thing. But I did it a whole lot better than Mama did, so Miss Anna Mae actually had the house kept the way she was paying to keep it. Still, Mama didn't let me come often. Not even when I was in school and had to walk home by myself and stay there by myself until she finished work. And then again stayed by myself when she went right back out. I didn't know why this was either, except, even if it was mean to think, Mama didn't like that Miss Anna Mae liked me. I didn't understand this. If Mama was quiet and respectful like Miss Anna Mae had told me a lady should be, a lot more people would like her. I was beginning to think Mama didn't care if anyone liked her. So much she'd rather they didn't like her, so she didn't have to bother with people at all.
No matter what you're in the middle of, a caller comes, you open your door to them.
You invite them into your home, and you make certain they don't leave hungry. Miss Anna Mae carried on, taking my attention again. Not easy to do in my house, where Mama spent her money on smokes and booze and not so much on food for her kid. I was looking forward to the day when I could get a job and I could have money and I could use it for whatever I wanted. I wasn't going to use it on smokes and booze, for certain. I wasn't going to use it on fancy dresses or shoes or handbags, either. I was going to keep my house like a good Southern woman would. My yard would be perfect, my house would be tidy, and there'd always be sweet tea and food in the fridge. "Yes, ma'am," I said to Miss Anna Mae. I felt her fingers curl on my shoulder, and I was looking at her, but I still felt sure as certain that her gaze grew sharper on me. "A good Southern girl pays attention in school." She lifted her other hand to her temple, then reached out and touched the middle of my forehead before she dropped it. "Ain't no call for a Southern woman to rub your nose in the fact that she's smarter than you. But make no mistake, she's gonna be smarter than you." I nodded. She shifted closer, and it felt like her eyes were burning into me. "You find that time when you get yourself a boy, child. He holds the door for you. You enter a room before him. He closes you safe in his car. If you're at a restaurant, he gives you the seat with the best view. He stands when you stand. He offers you his hand when it's needed. And if you've got a touch with a drill and a hankering to use it, then you use it, girl. But if you don't, and you got hooks you need to put up in your bathroom, he best be getting on that for you and doing it without any back talk or delay."
"Yes, ma'am," I whispered. The wonders of such a boy as I'd never known making my insides feel funny.
"As for you, Miss Daisy, you take care of yourself," she continued. "Don't you leave the house without your hair set, your face done, and your earrings in."
She patted my shoulder, but then gripped again tight.
"You get older, you'll find your style. And don't let anyone tell you what that is. You're a good girl in a way I know you'll always be a good girl. Be proud of that. Good posture, chin up, show your pride, sugar. Be who you are, however that evolves, and don't let anyone cut you down."
Gosh, but it felt nice her saying I was a good girl. It was harder to think of not letting anyone cut me down. That was always happening. I decided just to get used to it. She let my shoulder go to put her hand in the pocket of the pretty flowered dress. She pulled out a small, dark blue box with a white bow. I took in a hard, quick breath.
"And last, Miss Daisy, a good Southern woman always has her pearls," she said softly.
I looked from the box to Miss Anna Mae, but she was blurry, seeing as I had tears in my eyes. "Miss Anna Mae," my voice was croaky. She lifted the box to me.
"Daisy, a gift is offered. You take it, you express your gratitude, and later you write a thank you note," she instructed.
I nodded, taking the box. I pulled the bow but held it in my fist as I flipped open the top. Inside, on a delicate gold chain, the prettiest, daintiest thing I'd ever seen, hung Atta pearls. Their creamy gleam made me feel dazzled. The one in the middle was the biggest, getting a little bit smaller as they went down each side.
"One for every year of your life, child,"
Miss Anna Mae told me, and I counted them. She was right. There were 13, and I was 13. That day, it was my birthday.
"Now,
To keep that set the way it should be, you come to me when you're 15 and I'll add the next 2 pearls, balance it out, she shared.
My gaze drifted up to hers. Miss Anna May, I repeated, my voice still sounding all choked.
And suddenly, with a swiftness I'd never seen her move, she was leaned into my face. You had that from your mama. You hear, Miss Anna May?
I nodded, doing it fast. I heard her. Oh, yes, I did.
You wear those when the time's right. They're yours, Daisy, so you wear them when the time is right.
She drew in a breath so big I saw her draw it before her voice got softer but no less strong.
They're yours, child. However you need them when the time comes, they're yours.
I didn't understand what she meant by that, but she was being so serious I felt it best to nod and again to do it fast. Thank you, I whispered. The fierce went out of her face and she cocked her head to the side. Her soft white hair swept back in the bun, filtering with the sunlight coming in her window like she was an angel. She smiled as she lifted a hand and brushed my bangs sideways on my forehead.
Every girl needs pretty things. Every girl needs a little bit of sparkle, however she can get it. But every Southern girl needs her pearls, she whispered back.
Daisy!
Mama yelled from somewhere in the house. I jumped. Miss Anna May closed her eyes. Her wrinkles shifted again with her frown before she opened them, looked at me and said, talking quietly,
I'm sure your mama's got good in her girl, but just to say, a Southern woman does not yell.
I nodded again. She nodded back.
Go find your mama, child.
I stepped away, took another step, and started to turn, but I stopped and turned back. Miss Anna May?
I'm right here, Daisy.
What did I say? No, how did I say all I wanted to say? The words got caught, twisting, filling my throat.
Daisy, where are you?
Mama shouted.
I know, Miss Anna May said, and from the look on her face, I saw by some miracle she did know exactly what I wanted to say without me having to say it. Now, go to your mama, child.
I nodded yet again, the feeling in my throat making wet pop out in my eyes. I swallowed, took in a big breath, dashed my hand on my eyes, and shoved the box into the pocket of my jeans. Then I turned and walked slowly out of the dining room, like a lady.
I suppose you'll be wanting some cake and ice cream or something.
Mama muttered when we were in her car on the way back home from Miss Anna May's house. No, Mama, it's okay.
Now she's being that passive-aggressive bullshit.
Mama kept muttering, now to herself, sort of. It was also to me. I closed my mouth. Mama didn't stop at the store. In the end, I made myself bologna sandwiches for my birthday dinner while Mama got ready to go out to Dulane's Roadhouse. But after she was gone, I ate my sandwiches sitting in front of the TV, and I did it wearing pearls. And 3 days later, Mama lost her job with Miss Anna May, seeing as she went to work late and found Miss Anna May had passed quietly in the night while she was sleeping. I walked away from Quick Swap with the cash in my pocket. I went right to the bus station. I bought a ticket and sat outside on the bench, my 2 suitcases on the sidewalk by my boots. The bus came. The driver tossed my beat-up, second-hand suitcases under the bus, and I climbed in. There weren't a lot of folks there, which was good. I didn't feel in a friendly mood, and Miss Anna May had taught me that a lady can make a stranger a friend in no time flat. And she should. I picked a seat at the back by the window. I rested my head against it and stared out, unseeing. I heard the bus start up and felt it pull away from the curb. When it did, I also felt the wet drip from my eye, rolling down my cheek. Then some more from the other eye. I let myself have that. Just for a spell. Doing it, lifting my hand and touching my fingers to my neck where the pearls I'd worn every day for the last 2 years no longer were. They were at Quick Swap. The time had come when I needed them. I knew Miss Anna May wouldn't mind. I understood her now. I understood a lot of things. Most of it I wished I didn't. They were gone, all I had of her. She gave them to me on my 13th birthday, and I'd pawned them on my 19th. I'd miss them,
but not as much as I missed her. When it was time to be done crying, I made myself be done. I opened my purse with its cracked fake leather and fished out my hanky, because Southern women carried hankies. I also pulled out my compact. I dabbed my eyes and carefully, swaying with the bus's movements in order not to make a mess of it, but I'd been doing it now for some time, and I was good at it. I fixed my makeup. I returned everything to my purse, kept it tucked in my lap, and looked down the long bus out the front window. We were headed west. It was going to be a long journey. I rested my head back on the seat and closed my eyes. Passing the time as the bus rolled over the miles, I built castles. Chapter 1. And Everything. Marcus. Marcus Sloane stood at the window in Smithy's office, staring down at the floor of the strip club, a quarter share of which he owned, but even so he rarely came, and he never did so when the business was in operation. He didn't need to. Smithy, who started the club, owned the rest of it, and ran it, knew his business. He was serious about it. He was also honest. And he had the right reputation for the job. A man you didn't fuck with, but a man who took care of his business by taking care of his customers as well as his staff, from cleaning ladies to bouncers to bartenders to talent. That was the first time Marcus had been there in over a year. It was morning. Early. They didn't open until 1. There were no windows to the building, so the lights inside were on. 3 women were moving through the space, one wiping down tables, the other 2 mopping the floor, and 2 women were on the stage. It appeared one was training the other. The door behind him opened, but Marcus didn't look from the window, even as he heard Smithy walk in. He kept his eyes on the stage.
"I hear you have a headliner."
Marcus noted to the window, his attention aimed through it, but locked on the blonde on that stage.
"Velvet Rope, brother,"
Smithy replied, and Marcus felt him move through the office. He also felt him stop at Marcus's side.
"She danced with the other girls for about a week,"
Smithy told him.
"Before I put her out there, saw it during her audition. Still, I'd no idea how much of a stir she was going to cause due to her talent. Don't need the bullshit it was going to bring. All the boys shoving their cash in daisy strings, the other girls get screwed since she's outshining them by a mile. If I clear the stage for her, she works the boys on her own, got no bitches working my nerves, whining about their tips. 4 sets, 3 songs each, she gets her take and then some. The other girls get a good break to re-oil or whatever, and the boys are primed and motivated to keep the goodness flowing after she leaves the stage."
3 sets, 2 songs, and no lap dances," Marcus stated.
"Say what?"
Smithy asked. Marcus turned to the man. He was black, big. In his day, he'd been fit, never lean, a powerhouse. His body had gone somewhat soft with age, but Smithy hadn't gone soft. He was sharp, shrewd, educated, and street smart. His life had been bumpy, not as bumpy as some, but bumpier than most. He'd stood strong through it, making smart decisions, wise alliances, and not many enemies.
3 sets, 2 songs, and no lap dances,"
Marcus repeated. Smithy's brows shot together as understanding came to him.
"Thought we had an agreement."
They did. Over a year ago, Smithy had hit some hard times with his family, one of his 4 women's brother finding trouble. He needed money to help him out. He'd taken it out of his business, and to keep that business functioning, he needed a partner, but would only take one who was silent, left the running of the club to Smithy, was open to a buyout when Smithy was back on his feet, kept his nose out of it, and simply took his cut every month. The brother, with Smithy and his woman's help, found his way back to the straight and narrow, and Marcus was more than likely going to be offered a buyout sometime soon. But now he was in.
"We did,"
he confirmed.
"Then respect, Marcus, but I'm not sure where you're coming from with that shit,"
Smithy remarked.
"An additional set and an additional song keeps the other girls off the stage,"
Marcus pointed out.
"Daisy's been headlining for 5 months, and so far they got no problem with it."
"They'd have less of a problem if they had 12 more minutes on the stage to get tips,"
Sure they would, but then Daisy'd be out and she'd be out of whack, man. Gotta have 3 bouncers go out right after she leaves the stage because a lot of them don't bother with shoving it in her string. They're in such a tizzy they just throw those bills right on the stage.
And the lap dances? Marcus asked.
It's double to get Daisy, and they're only private. She doesn't work in the room.
You got eyes on that?
Fuck yeah, Sloane.
Smithy bit out, losing patience and not the kind of man who had trouble showing it, even to the kind of man Marcus was.
You've seen my setup. Got cameras everywhere. No one fucks with my girls.
I don't want her doing lap dances.
Man, a bad night she could bring in 500, $1,000 on private dances. A good night she's going home with 2 G's cash in her purse from lap dances alone.
Marcus looked back to the window, a feeling on the back of his neck like it was stinging just at the thought of that woman gyrating in some stranger's lap.
You want to explain this interest to me?
Smithy requested. Marcus studied the headlining stripper at Smithy's. Platinum hair and a lot of it. Petite frame, her ribs and waist trimmed to the point they were delicate. She also had slim hips and a narrow ass. Her breasts were huge, however. Obviously augmented, nevertheless, she'd clearly had them seen to by a genius. They somehow fit her frame, worked with the rest of her, drawing attention away from her height and her slight build, which could be seen as vulnerabilities, and giving her presence, potency, power. But her face was stunning. Wide smile, white teeth, and a good deal of them. Big eyes, elegant nose, soft cheekbones. All of this she highlighted with the expert use of makeup from what was clearly a gift of superior genes into something that shone like a Hollywood starlet. A starlet of a stripper who looked a good deal like Dolly Parton, who also likely got home the night before, earliest 3 in the morning, and was right then, only hours later, back on the stage helping another girl by teaching her some moves.
Marcus, brother,
Smithy's voice came at him.
You got a problem with the way I do business, and I give you reason to have that problem, then we have a talk. I don't give you that reason. We don't have conversations like this one. That's our deal.
Marcus listened to him while he watched Daisy talking to the other girl, and then she ran across the stage, doing it gracefully in platform sandals, her stone-washed jeans tight on her ass and hips and all the way down her legs. Still, after she ran the 4 steps, she launched herself high, grabbing onto the pole at least 3 feet higher than she was, her body swinging around by just her hands. When the swing ended, she climbed up the pole, hand over hand. Doing this quickly, taking herself up another 4 feet, she flipped her bottom half over, wrapping her skinny legs around the pole. She dropped back, her hair flowing down, and with her only hold on the pole being her legs, she arched her back and slid down slowly, somehow circling the pole as she did it. She ended this doing a layout with her hands on the floor, her legs in slow and controlled movements coming over her head one after the other, her hands pushing off. She was up, standing straight with perfect posture, and smiling like she hadn't moved an inch, much less just accomplished a feat of gymnastics, in a pair of tight jeans that had to take a good deal of strength and effort. Fuck. That face. That smile. Fuck.
I'm thinking, watching that,
Smithy kept at him.
You got a clue that every asshole who runs a club in Denver, Jefferson, Arapahoe, and Adams counties has been breathing heavy down that girl's neck in hopes of recruiting her. You think to take her off private dances and give her less time on the stage, she likes me. She likes the class of Smithies most other clubs don't have. She likes the other girls. She likes the velvet rope. She likes the Porsche she bought herself last month. What she ain't gonna like is that.
Marcus said nothing, watching her spot the other girl as she tried to do the same maneuver Daisy had, and watching as the girl failed.
And the other girls don't care, Marcus,
Smithy kept at him.
She packs the place. Every night gotta send men home from the line without them even getting in the door because the joint is jumping. That's cash in the cash register for you and me, brother. Cover is higher to get in with Daisy headlining. Bottles behind the bar getting empty and quick. My weekly order of booze has doubled. But it's also cash in the pocket not only of the dancers, but the bartenders and the waitresses. Everyone is happy.
Marcus turned his attention from Daisy to Smithy.
Cut her back a set and a song each set, and no private dances, Smithy.
Smithy became angry.
Been in this game 7 years, Sloane, and those 7 years been waiting for a talent just like Daisy to take Smithy's and all the souls I got working for me who depend on it to the next level.
Increase her salary by 500,000, give her 4 weeks paid vacation, and cut her back a set and a song, and no private dances, Smithy. Smithy's eyes grew large.
500,000?
He choked. I'll cover that. Smithy's face got hard, but his mouth moved.
The other part of the deal is that I work to buy you out as soon as I can. I'm about 2 months from doing that, now Daisy's here. I don't need you deeper, and no disrespect, I don't want you deeper. You knew that from the beginning, too. I needed you, and you stepped in for me, and you got my gratitude for that. You got it from my heart.
He thumped his chest.
And in the bank. But this is my club, brother, and I want it back.
I'm not buying deeper in, Smithy. I'm covering the adjustment to Daisy's salary.
And when I buy you out, who covers Daisy then? I don't take a percentage of tips. Those are the girls. I take a shave off the price of a lap dance of all the girls, but Daisy's elevated pricing goes to her. How do I cover 500,000 fucking dollars after you're gone?
You won't have to.
How's that?
Because she'll be gone. Smithy's brows shot up.
She'll...
He started to explode. He shut his mouth and stared at Marcus. Then he whispered,
Motherfucker.
He wasn't calling Marcus that. It was a muted exclamation. Such was his shock, a surprisingly quiet one from Smithy, who is not a quiet man. It took him a moment to compose himself, and Marcus gave him that moment. When he did, still quiet, he also seemed to brace, now surprising Marcus because it looked like he did it with a hint of fear, and Marcus had known Smithy for a long time, and he'd never known the man to show fear.
"Don't go there,"
he said.
"I'm sorry?"
Marcus asked. Smithy shook his head.
"Again, respect, brother. You got that from me, you know it. And I'm still asking you not to go there."
There was the reason behind his fear. Smithy might be a soft touch in some ways, but he was a hard ass in all others. But no one in Denver challenged Marcus Sloane. Marcus turned fully to him. Smithy took a small step back before he held his ground.
"Why would you ask that?" Marcus queried. "She's a good girl."
Losing patience and having other things to do, Marcus crossed his arms on his chest, prompting, "And?" when Smithy said no more.
"She needs..."
He started but didn't finish.
"She needs what?"
Marcus pushed. Smithy's focus sharpened on him.
"Peace."
Marcus felt that one word stab through his chest, feeling it and remembering the vision of a beautiful woman with lots of hair and a big smile, hiding the fact she had to be tired in order to help out a friend.
"Peace,"
he whispered. Smithy shook his head again.
"She and me, we throw back a few. She's got time not dancing, I hang with her during some of it. Took her a bit. She don't trust easy, but she shared. And what she shared, Marcus, I'm asking you, man, just don't go there."
Now Marcus was angry. In fact, furious. He did not show this outside the steely edge that was now in his voice.
"I would not harm a woman." "Brother, you got a stable of whores."
"I do not," he clipped. "I oversee the management of a network of men who run escort agencies, and I do this to make sure these men run this network appropriately."
"Like I said, you got a stable of whores, or a network of 'em."
"You know that story, Smithy," Marcus said softly, the soft not gentle, just quiet, and dangerous. Smithy did know that story, so he left that, but didn't leave it alone.
"You got other shit, you—"
he started.
"Not your business." "It is, you tie her up in it."
"She's not your business either." Again, Smithy's eyes got big, and he threw an arm toward the window.
She's a Smithies girl and she's not my business.
Marcus had had enough. Do you want a problem with me? He asked.
Of course I don't, Smithy spat.
Then cut a set, cut a song in each set, no private dances, and increase her salary, Smithy.
God damn it, Marcus, Smithy bit out.
Do it, Marcus ordered, then dropped his arms from his chest and moved toward the door. He stopped and turned back when Smithy called his name.
I won't have a problem having a problem with you if you make problems for her, Smithy declared. Do you get that?
They talked, Daisy and Smithy. Smithy knew. Peace. Marcus nodded. Smithy jerked up his chin in agitated anger and turned his back on Marcus. Marcus walked out of the office, down the stairs, and through the club, not sparing Daisy a glance. At that moment, he had business to deal with. He needed his head in that. When it was time for Daisy, he wanted his attention fully on her. But it would be time for Daisy. Soon.
Daisy. Who's that tall, dark drink of handsome water? I asked Ashlyn, my eyes on the tall man with broad shoulders and fabulous suit who was sauntering out of the club in the manner of a man who owned it. In the manner of a man who owned anything he wanted.
Don't go there, Ashlyn answered.
I looked to Ashlyn. What, sugar?
She shook her head.
He's hot. Knew a girl who's had him, and I'll repeat, he's hot.
Took her out 4 times, all to fancy restaurants where she had to buy fancy dresses and shoes, and he gave it to her good at the end of the night, and I mean real good, the way she described it. He also, like, opened the car door for her and everything.
Opened the car door for her and everything. Oh, my.
Ended it with giving her a gold bracelet. Ashlyn carried on, recapturing my attention. Pure class.
Her look got intense as she stared into my eyes.
Annie's trouble.
I glanced to the door that he'd obviously gone through because he'd disappeared, then back to Ashlyn.
Trouble?
Ashlyn didn't answer that question. She just shook her head again and declared,
He wouldn't date a stripper anyway. Like I said, he's class.
I felt my mouth get tight.
I was not a big fan of judgment. I'd had that shit shoved down my throat from the time I could cipher. A mother like I'd had, a father like I'd had, the creeps, losers, and assholes my mama had no problem parading through her daughter's life, our home, the jobs mama would get and lose and the reasons she'd lose them, the clothes I had to wear, bought at yard sales, garage sales, thrift shops, the crap people would say, not even worried I might hear. I didn't matter, and my feelings sure didn't, so they might not say it to my face, but they didn't do anything to shield me from it either. I got out of that, and it didn't get much better. Pretty much every bitch and dickhead felt they had a highly tuned white trash-o-meter and took one look at me thinking it binged at the highest frequency. Okay, so my mama wasn't all that. My daddy really wasn't all that. But I'd gotten on a bus and left all that behind and never looked back. Did that matter?
Hell no.
Yeah, so I'd found my own trouble in a variety of ways, mostly after Miss Anna Mae died, doing a stint at juvie that wasn't all that fun and learning my lesson. And yeah, so I'd hooked up with some boys who weren't much to write home about, mostly because I liked boys, boys liked me, and a girl's gotta have a first kiss. And a second and third, etc. And they were the only ones who asked me out. They might not have been much. They might have been trouble. They might have treated me like crap, but at least they all, everyone, were F-I-N-E fine. I could pull in a looker like no other even before one of them bought me my boob job. It just sucked they were all also varying shades of asshole. But I got my first job when I was 16, and I was never late, never sick. I worked hard and showed respect that wasn't showed me, eating shit when I had to, pulling the knife out of my back and getting on with it whenever someone shoved one in there. I got my high school diploma. I might not have graduated with honors, but I was on the AB honor roll every time. No matter. They saw a woman with big hair and big hooters with a southern drawl, a way with eyeliner and a penchant for rhinestones, and they thought they knew me through and through. Sure, now I was a stripper.
and I'd been a cocktail waitress, a hotel maid, a grocery store clerk, and the hostess at a restaurant that, even though I'd been young, I still knew the majority of the clientele were scary individuals in the sense they were feloniously scary individuals. I knew I got that job and got paid good to do it because I had huge knockers and the ability to keep my trap locked shut. What I was not, and never had been, was white trash. Miss Anna May knew exactly what I was, and she knew everything. I could work a rhinestone, a lip liner, and a G-string, but I was a good girl where it mattered.
He's also loaded, Ashlyn broke into my angry thoughts.
Men who got money like he does got the means to get themselves some that don't gotta shake it in guys' faces in order to make it.
Well, if he's got a problem with seeing past that shit, sugar, then he might not want me even if he did expend the effort to look at me, which he did not. But I don't want me any of him, either.
Ashlyn looked like she let out a sigh of relief. Whatever. I turned my attention back to the door. What's his name?
Daisy. I looked back at Ashlyn.
Don't want to know it to go after him, honey bunch. Want to know it to avoid him.
Ashlyn nodded.
His name is Marcus. Marcus Sloan.
Oh, yeah. That name said it all, even if the suit and the $100 haircut didn't. He was class. He was loaded. He was trouble. And I was a good girl. So he'd been a good view for a few seconds. And just like you always had to do in life, you took the good when you got it, as you got it. And when it was time for it to be done, you didn't hold on. You moved on. So I put Marcus Sloan out of my mind, and I moved on.
Chapter 2. Nothing. Marcus.
Run the tape.
Sir Smithy says,
for the first time in a very long time, Marcus Sloane's composure slipped. Run the goddamned tape. Marcus ground out through his teeth.
The man in front of him, sitting in the chair at a bank of monitors, swallowed visibly, his eyes shifting only momentarily to the man at Marcus's back before he turned to the controls. He hit some, and all of the monitors blanked except one came up and the tape ran. Marcus stood still and forced himself to watch. It didn't last long. He was not a man unaware that acts of lasting brutality could be delivered in shockingly short periods of time. In fact, he'd built an empire on this. He had just never seen anything like that. The monitor cut out when the action on it had played out and the man turned it off. But Marcus's eyes didn't leave it even when he asked, "Where's Smithy?"
"He's cut up about this, Mr. Sloan. Fired Milo because he fucked up. Lost his mind when he did it. I was there. Thought he'd rip his head off. He..."
Marcus's gaze moved to the man.
"This was not the question I asked," he said slowly.
"I think... The man moved uncomfortably in his chair and said no more.
"I won't ask again," Marcus told him quietly.
I heard someone say, he and Lenny. That is, I heard they went to go see Shirlene Jackson and Darius Tucker.
Lenny, Marcus knew in keeping tabs, was one of Smithy's bouncers. Good kid, working his way through college providing security at a strip club. Marcus had met him once, and if he'd gotten a whiff of what he needed from the man, he'd have recruited him. But Smithy shared Lenny wanted to devote his life to finding a cure for cancer, something he'd lost a grandmother and aunt to, so he was studying biology in hopes one day to do that. He might be studious, but he was also a large, dark-skinned black man with a talent for security. And if he'd seen what Marcus just saw, now he was a man with a mission that might put his future plans in jeopardy. That did not factor to Marcus. Only one thing factored, and Shirlene Jackson and her nephew Darius Tucker, both colleagues of Marcus's, though they played different games on different turf, were a good start. But only a start. He turned on his foot and moved from the room, his man Brady following him. Once they'd cleared it, they walked through the silent strip club, now closed when it should be open, lit only by its copious red neon. When they were halfway to the front door, Marcus kept moving and didn't look to Brady, even as he ordered,
"I want a meeting with Lee Nightingale."
Sir?
He stopped when they arrived at the door, his hand on the handle, and looked to Brady.
"Liam Nightingale,"
He's recently opened an investigations firm in Lodo. Get me a meet. Immediately. For what?
Brady asked.
I'll explain that when I sit down with him,
Marcus answered. Brady got closer. His man was tall, lean, cut, pretty boy features, light brown hair, all of this hiding his ability to get a variety of jobs done in a variety of creative ways. In other words, however he needed to do it to get it done. He was uncomfortable, not with what he said next. Marcus had no problems with the people he trusted around him speaking their minds, and Brady knew that. He was uncomfortable with Marcus making any moves that might be unsafe. This didn't happen often. In fact, it happened rarely and only when the need arose. But Brady was protective in more ways than it being part of his job description to protect his boss. Marcus had bought that loyalty not with money, but with something only men like him and Brady knew was much more precious.
Mr. Sloan, we don't know dick about that guy.
If you think that's true, you haven't been paying attention,
Marcus told him, his tone not harsh, simply informative.
He hasn't been on the scene long, but he's made quite an impact in the time he has. I've heard about him. I've heard he gets the job done. I've also heard his dad is a cop. Veteran. Years on the force. His brother is also a cop. So is his best friend, Chavez. And Chavez's younger brother? No one knows what that guy is. All they know is that Hector Chavez is a wild card, and anyone with links to a wild card like that makes me uneasy.
Nightingale's other best friend is Darius Tucker.
Brady gave a nod, but said,
He's still untested.
Then we're going to test him.
Brady held his gaze only a moment before he nodded. Marcus continued to issue orders.
You're on me, as usual. I want Louis on the streets. The other men stay on task, but keep Vince from this.
Brady's mouth got hard, and he nodded. Marcus's man, Vince, had his uses. They were valuable, but both Marcus and Brady had had reservations for some time about the man. Louis seemed to be able to keep him in check, however, so those valuable uses could be put to work without causing hassle or headache. With no further words, they moved out of the club. Brady opened the back door to the black sedan limousine that was waiting only feet from the entrance of Smithy's. Marcus folded in. Brady closed the door, rounded the car, and sat in the front seat next to Marcus's driver, Ronald. Through this, Marcus pulled out his phone. He flipped it open and made the call.
Yes, Mr. Sloan,
his secretary Kelly answered.
Smithy has a dancer. Her name is Daisy. Find out her address and send her a bouquet of daisies. A large one.
Daisies?
Daisies. A lot of them.
I'll do that right now, Mr. Sloan.
Every day.
Pardon?
Send her a bouquet every day, starting today. Not the same color, but the same size.
Right. Every day, not the same color, but large.
Very large.
Of course, Mr. Sloan. Anything else? She asked.
Not right now.
Okay, then. I'll take care of it.
Thank you, Kelly.
My pleasure, Mr. Sloan.
He flipped his phone shut and drew a breath in through his nostrils. He was trying unsuccessfully not to allow what he saw on that tape to run through his head. As he was unsuccessful at this, he flipped his phone open again and made another call.
Marcus.
Shirlene Jackson answered.
You and your nephew find him, you bring him to me.
There was a moment of silence before she replied,
That's not the deal we just made with Smithy.
I'll handle Smithy.
You got chops, Marcus, but the angry black man who just stormed out of my house is not a man I'm thinking even you can handle.
They're close,
he shared with her.
Know that. He didn't say it, but I think I got it. But that only makes it worse. Bottom line, she's a Smithy's girl, and she got raped in his own goddamned parking lot. Doesn't matter to him she came back because she forgot something so he didn't know she was on the premises. Only matters to him that his shit-for-brains security guy left the cameras so his waitress girlfriend could give him a hand job in the handicapped bathroom stall. This means he was getting off when he should have been at his post, catching that shit, and shutting it down so it didn't happen. Wasn't Smithy who got a handjob, but he's taking that all on his shoulders. He's feeling a weight, and that shit is heavy. So like I said, this is not a man who can be handled, and I'm not thinking that's gonna change any time in, I don't know, say the next century.
How many children does Smithy have, Charlene? Marcus asked.
I can't keep tabs. Brother keeps adding to his army, she muttered.
Regardless, I'm sure they'd prefer him running his club and not serving 20 to life.
Charlene had no comment to this.
You find him, you bring him to me.
Can we play with him first? She requested.
Be my guest.
Marcus Sloan, always generous.
She was again muttering, then she ended it.
Later.
Goodbye, Charlene.
He flipped his phone shut and drew in another breath. It was then he allowed himself to envision what was on that tape. He was interrupted in this when Brady dropped the phone he had to his ear, turned his head, and looked into the back at Marcus.
You have a meet with Nightingale at 2,
Brady told him. In other words, in 20 minutes.
Excellent,
Marcus replied. Brady turned forward. Marcus breathed.
Daisy.
Aren't these pretty?
I didn't look. I kept staring out the window of my apartment, seeing nothing.
Daisy, hon?
Letitia, one of Smithy's 4 women, got closer to me. Yeah, he had 4, and yeah, he worked that, and yeah, I got that. Smithy had that big of a heart. Not one of them, or not any of the gazillion kids he had, felt what they got from him was lacking.
You're sweet being here with me, sugar, but I'm feeling the need for alone time.
Daisy.
I turned to look at her, my mouth open to say something, when I stopped and stared at the huge bouquet of flowers she held in her hands. Daisies? Smithy?